Blog Talk Radio. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, 2022, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy day to you, and thanks for tuning in. I truly appreciate you being here. I hope you're doing well, all things considered. Life is certainly full of uncertainties and unsettling shifts indeed. So we have to keep on keeping on. Is can be a lot of work on some days, depending on who you are and what you do. I'll tell you what, life has a lot of humps and lumps and bumps, and it ain't for chumps. It really is not. I've learned you will have to have on your game face just about every day. Yep, your warrior apparel, all of that, and know how to put one foot in front of the other and be in full focus of the victory you know that you're needing. If that sounded like life can be a fight, well, sometimes, yes, sometimes it really is. But you know you have the victory view. If you can see what it is you need and want, well, just keep on going, because those lumps and humps and bumps, they get smaller and almost disappear. All you have to do is just hang in there and keep fighting and keep managing things and keep maneuvering, keep moving, keep pressing, keep believing. Yes, you will make it. You definitely will make it through it and to wherever it is you need to go. I promise you, I've been there, done that more than once, so I promise you, you can make it. You know, author, publisher, and PR expert Tanya White is my guest today, and she knows something about a familiar challenge many of us have faced, the heart-wrenching loss of a loved one. She has a new book, The Battle Behind My Smile, where she shares insightful and intimate realities about her personal loss and journey of grief and what has kept her going and going and going strong. I'm so happy to have her to talk with us today. Welcome, Tanya.
Hello, Civil Race Fox. I am so honored to be on your show once again.
Yeah, it's been quite a while, but I'm telling you, seven books later?
If you know, it may have been. It may have been. Yeah, I'm just released my ninth book. It's coming later this month.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
All right. Well, I love hearing that. I know you are really so dynamic at getting your message across, and some of those titles really grab our attention. I'm excited to talk about those today. And I always get started, though, Tanya, talking about the individual, because I think it just kind of sets the stage for everything else that we're going to be talking about. So I'm going to start by asking you about you. I just want you to tell us, who is Tanya White?
Ooh, that has been a long journey. I'm going to be 52, mm-hmm. and I'm still learning who I am. But in a nutshell, I can confidently say that Tanya White is a rarity. I am a rare Jew sent by God through the appearance of Joe and Irma White almost 52 years ago, December 31st, 1970. Yes, I'm not mm-hmm, ashamed mm-hmm. of my age. former educator for 20 years in my local school district, the oldest of three, and I take that position seriously. I am the oldest. of three.
Yeah.
I have a brother and sister. I am an aunt of five and a grantee. I call myself a grantee of one and a half. the half
That's
will be coming in about 5 weeks. And I'm a devoted member of Delta Sigma Theta Incorporated, very active in the Louisville Alumni Chapter. I am a devoted super fan of New Edition. New Edition since 1983. I am one of the original Candy Girls. So do not give me
okay.
a mistake. Those are my boys. I follow them.
I know that's right.
But I'm I am also now, I have switched in the last year, and we'll talk about that, to full-time entrepreneurship. I am the owner, founder of SNT Publishing. I have been writing professionally since 2005, released my first book in 2007, and now I'm 17 years later, going to release my ninth book at the end of September. And I just absolutely love what I do. I was one of those book nerds in high school. My teacher tell us to read a book. I wanted to do a book report because I had to write what I read. So that's how the reading and writing go hand in hand, and that's what you get Tanya White now. And I absolutely love the medium of radio. I love giving people a voice, and I also love having a voice of my own. So that is Tanya White in a nutshell.
Well, that's a mouthful, I'll tell you, and a life full. That is so wonderful. I tell you, I can hardly wait to get into your entrepreneurship background. I know that you have put out lots of books, and we're going to focus on a couple of those. But I want to talk about a couple of things, because when I got your most recent email, you mentioned a couple of things. You talked about, well, we know you're a successful author, a successful publisher, but I know you also mentioned to me how you wanted to help other business women that may have
yes.
a similar passion for what your, you know, what your line of work, and how you can help them. Why don't we talk about that for a few minutes? Because, you know, that dream and that desire is locked up in a lot of people, and
yes.
they just really don't know how to get it out and get it on, you know, on into a book. I talked to someone recently who I was kind of surprised that she mentioned to me that she just was so fearful about and hesitant about putting it all together. And I guess thoughts of, you know, is it going to matter? Is what I have to say going to make a difference? You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, will it be successful or will it fail? And, you know, I don't know that any of those questions really matter in the moment. You need to go ahead and, you know, get that book out of your belly, out of your heart, out of your head. You just go ahead and do it. Talk about that, and then talk about the actual publishing process, because I know that's where a lot of people get hung up.
Absolutely.
So how is it like to help people?
Yes, you said two common fears that seasoned authors and novice authors say. You said that she said she was struggling to put it down on paper. I am one of the philosophies, if God is put in your spirit, or if you just have this burning desire that will not go away, that I need to write this in a book, you are supposed to be writing it in a book, first of all. So you have to get over that fear that will it be, and you said, will it be successful? Will people buy it? That is like one of those when you say your mind is playing tricks on you. Because first of all, success is defined not by the number of sales, but by, first of all, you being obedient to what you're supposed to do. And then you never know. It could be just one person that you're writing for that you will never
mm-hmm.
meet. But 3-4 years later, I get this all the time, Civil Right, they will find you and tell you, I bought your book 4 years ago. I was in this place. Your book helped me as I transition. I just got this email on Facebook last week from a woman that I spoke to, a women's shelter who were in transition from domestic violence, drugs, but they had to go through this program for so long, and then they was transitioning out to be on their own. And so I had blessed all of them with my Yes, I Am Enough book. And that was three or four years ago. So she said, I wanted to find you because now I have been sober for 3 years, and your book was the start of me knowing that, first of all, I am enough and that I can do anything that I set my mind to doing. And I have been sober for 3 years and successful in my job, and now I want to write my story. And so that blessed me. Mm-hmm. Not knowing when I was writing that, I just, because that was one of, I think it's my sixth book, so I knew that was the message that I had to get out, not knowing that it was literally going to help somebody in their transition and then help them to remain sober from a lifetime of addiction. So, yes, I may have not reached my number of sale goals in that book, but that testimony blessed me and said, yep, I was supposed to write that book. And I'm glad that I was obedient and not get discouraged. And one thing that people say, and I want to really put this out there, you do not make a lot of money from selling books. What you do is build a brand and carve yourself out as a subject matter expert. So I know we're in this society that makes it seem so easy to achieve certain things. And you hear about, yes, this person was a best selling author, this person, yes, it could happen, but you don't know how many years, how many projects that were not a bestseller. So if you get in your mind, I'm going to sell a whole lot of books, you're going to be disappointed. What a book does is, like I said, makes you a subject matter expert, and it creates other opportunities for you to build other streams of financial income, because that is important. But it also sets you on a path of awareness as being a speaker and for churches, nonprofits, and other event planners to know, hey, this person spoke at this place. My friend was there. They said she's a good speaker. He's a good speaker. I'm going to book her. So get it out your mind that, okay, I'm writing this book to sell a lot of books. That doesn't happen. Be courageous enough to say, if it's in your spirit and it won't get out, that you're supposed to write a book, write it. And like anything, it's like starting a business, losing weight, doing something that you've never done before. Because when I first started writing, yes, I came from a family of readers, and, you know, we wrote speeches for church and everything. But being an author, being a black female self-published author, I didn't have that in my family, nor in my city at the time. And so it was only about three or four of us African-American women who were said, you know, we want to write books. So what we did was banded together. That was way back in 2006. Self-publishing at the time was taboo. It wasn't accepted as it is now. But so we banded together. We hooked up with other authors from different cities. We learned the craft. We learned the business. We enhanced our writing skills. And we learned from each other. And so 17, 16 years later, we're still in the game. And still what we've transitioned to becoming is not just self-published authors, but experts in publishing, marketing, media. And so we're still in our city. We are known as the trailblazers and the people to go to now. But had we not started 16, 17 years ago with saying we were budding often saying, you know, I got a book in me. And none of us had anyone in our family. At the time, no, it was unheard of. We had the Terry McMillans, of course, the Victoria Christian Murphy. Those were people that we looked up to. Valerie Burton, she was my coach, loved her. But nobody in our city and nobody in our family had ever done what we did. And so we had to get out of the mindset, oh, I'm in this to sell books. I'm in this, what if nobody buys it? Because that is a reality. But you got to push past that and tap into the desire, because it is a marathon, not a sprint. And so what you're doing is building a career, building a brand, and building your purpose. And so I tell anybody out there, if there's a book in you, and we all have a story to tell, but if there's a book in you, learn how to write, first of all, trust people to coach you who know what they're talking about, and don't take anything personal. It's just like a trainer. If you go in, they got a schedule for you, a workout trainer. Okay, it's going to be tough, but you can't quit because the results that you have in mind, you've told them, and they have it, and they know the formula. So you have to trust them. It's going to hurt. You're going to be in pain, but you got to keep pressing because you have a goal. So I tell people, keep pressing, have a goal, don't succumb to fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you to speak to a couple of things before we move on to the next part of my question. Another person asked me about the templates and the opportunities to self-publish, and I was explaining to her some of what I did, and I told her how critical it is, the editing and the formatting. I was telling her about that.
Say that again, Civil Ray Fox. Say that again, Civil Ray. It's critical, isn't it?
Yes. And I
have thrown away
her
many books because the cover was gorgeous. The back cover summary is what I wanted. But when I got in there in the editing part, it was like, they didn't take time to do this. I'm not reading it.
I told her, she said, well, how many edits did you do? I said, about 50 or 60. And she looked at me, it was like all the life went out of her. She said, but why? I said, well, when you reread and reread, you're going to see something different every time. You're going to see things you need to add. You're going to see things you need to take out. You're going to see things that need correcting. You're going to see things that just didn't make sense to put it in there in the first place. I said, it's grueling, but you got to get it right. It's got to be right. I mean, I think you're absolutely right telling you about the message. That's important. We have that in us, and we gotta do that. So I encouraged her to do that. It didn't seem like it was. She really walked away kind of downcast. but that's really a reality. I mean, if you're gonna do it, polish it. Don't just, put something out there because you want to say you wrote a book. I mean, it needs to have some polish on it. It needs to look good, especially if you're doing it all by yourself. It needs to have some a good look and some good content and, easy reading through it and all of that. So that's important. The other thing I want to ask you to reflect on is if a person wants to make the investment, they can have somebody do what we just said, like you. And as far as the marketing piece and selling, because, there are those of us who want message and money. You can pay people, and it's pricey, to get behind you and market on a much heavier level and to markets that you may not even be able to even think of all by yourself. So, I think it's pricey, though. It's very pricey to do, but that option is there, and it does sell books.
Before we get to the marketing part, I want to go back to the editing part because you said it is critical. Let me tell you, you do not write a book just to say I'm an author. I said, I've thrown many of books away. Like I said, because I'm a book lover at heart. All the publishing and writing, that's secondary. I love to read. I'm an avid reader, so I know how books are published and how they're edited, how they're formatted. And that was one thing that was taboo about self-publishing years ago because there was no regulation about what was being put out. And so I'm going to speak to those who think that editing is one and done or two and three. No, you said 50 or 60 times. That's about the norm. And that's what I do before I send it out to an outside editor. And then we go several rounds after that because you want it to be polished. You do not write a book just to have a book release party and your friends and family just to say they have a book and they know an author. Let me tell you something. When you put your product out there, my daddy used to say this all the time, don't half do anything. Because if when you half do something, you are representing me, and I didn't teach you how to do that. And so when you put stuff out there, you are putting it out there, and you are not just, it's not just a book product, and to so say that you're an author, you're putting out for all the other self-published authors and authors in the business. Because when people say, oh, you're an author, you put out a book, it's a given to them that you've known and learned the business and that what you put out is going to be a quality product. So for those out there who are rushing to just put out a book and just have a book release party to sell to your friends and family, who they'll buy the book, but then I tell my clients, you have to move past people buying it to actually reading it. And you, as you're writing the book, you've got to look at the aesthetics of it. It's just like if you went to a restaurant and you paid your money. I don't care if you paid $2.99 at Denny or $29 at Ruth Chris for one steak. You're expecting quality because you paid your money. That's what readers are expecting. They're expecting quality. They don't care if you're a self-published author, and you can do it all, but your book does not have to look secondhand. It can look like any best-selling New York Times best-selling book on the shelf, but you got to take that time to learn the business, not rush it, ask people questions, ask people to give their input, and that's another thing. When you ask people to give their input, you got to be prepared for them to tell you the truth, and not be offended by the truth.
Right.
So that was it. Civil Ray, you said it, so it is critical. Editing is a critical part. I have reverse contracts with potential authors because they wanted to rush and didn't want to take the editing advice, because like when you come with me, I'm not putting a book out there so people can say Tanya White helped me and SAT. No, we're gonna get it right, because we're not writing a book just for friends and family to have. I'm thinking beyond the book. I'm thinking, like you said, the marketing professionals, the media professionals who have 5 minutes to see if they want to book you on their show. So they're flipping through the book and they're looking for specific things. And if it doesn't have it, then they're tossing it to the side with the thousands of other things. So you've got to be patient. It's all in patience. When you're too eager, you got to check your motive, and you got to be willing to wait.
That's so true.
Yeah,
that
you got to be
so
willing
true.
To
I'm glad
wait
you
to
said
get a
that.
Quality product. Yeah, yeah.
That was the other thing I was going to mention, and we're going to move on and talk about specifically your books, but I was going to say, what's your motive? You know, is it just because, like you said, you know, it gets me some attention and makes me feel, you know, special? Well, to feel proud of your product and all of that is really good, and it's nice if you've got some genuine accolades and all of that, but the motive is in the message. For real,
yes.
That's the real deal. Are you writing something that you know has a particular message, appeal?
Yes.
Whatever your goal may be in your creation, but to keep, you know, putting line for line and thinking, oh, this is gonna make me look good. No, this is gonna be, you know, that you're already lost in space. I have to say, because that's just not that whole writing thing comes out in the most interesting way. It there's a flow to it, and there's almost a naturalness to it if your message is coming from a place of authenticity. It just gets itself on paper. It does.
It gets,
but the work,
and there's
it doesn't.
There's a difference, Civil Ray, from somebody who is a gifted, skilled writer who writes a book, and then mm-hmm. somebody who has a message and wants to put it in a book. There's a mm-hmm. total difference.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of gifted, skilled writers who work on the back end as editors, writing coaches, and never produce a book. They help others. But I've been in this business, like I said, 17 years, and I can tell the ones who are gifted in writing and they love the craft and the art and the process of writing than those who just want to write a book. And there's nothing wrong with either one, but I just want people to know that there's a difference between that. And you have to know which one you fall into. And then you still, both still have to follow the writing process, brainstorm, edit. I'm going back to the old school. I tell every my clients, you know, before you write, because people want to free write. No, you write an outline, have your little points.
Mm-hmm,
I'm dating myself.
Mm-hmm.
Write it out and then type it.
Right.
And that makes your thoughts flow and knows what you want. So, yeah, it is the writing process, like I said, I love it. I'm a book lover, and I hate to buy books that I really need. The title is what I need, and then I read the back cover summary. But when I get in there, it's like you didn't spend any time in making this the best quality, and that's disheartening.
Yeah, it really is, and I'm sure that you just said enough to help people know how to get it right, and to tap into you for the help that they need. I'm going to go ahead and shift now, because your newest, The Battle Behind My Smile, I think is definitely one of those messages with purpose and with necessity. I want you to talk about it. Because I really do believe that it's meant to bless a lot of lives and a lot of spirits, and to help a lot of people through that emotional place of grief, a place that I think for your story, you're speaking to a big audience with the book and all the other things you're doing and here and other places that you have no clue how to come through it. Have no clue if they will ever come through it. It's such a challenging place to find yourself, particularly when you just, it kind of hits you out of nowhere, that would be a part of your story. So let's unfold The Battle Behind My Smile for people.
Oh, so The Battle Behind My Smile, God gave me a project June 4th, 2021. I was in the most wonderful relationship with a man I prayed for 49 years. At that point, we had dated exclusively for almost 15 months. Met a month before the pandemic, before the world was shut down, literally. And so that was a blessing in that, because we didn't have all the superficial things to pull us away from really getting to know each other. And so I was consulting, had not had my publishing company then. I was still helping other authors birth books. And one thing, Stefan was his name, he said, "Sweetie, I love that your business is booming, your consulting business, but when are you going to write your next book?" I was like, I was like, I've always wanted to do an anthology. And so literally June 4th, I got the title, The Battle Behind My Smile. I emailed him during a morning, little gushy couples, "Hey, sweetie, hi, honey." And I said, "Hey, what do you think about this title, The Battle Behind My Smile, Private Public Testimonies of Triumph in the Midst of Our Private Trauma?" He was like, "Whoa, that's deep." Not knowing that exactly a week later, we will experience the most devastating news ever. So June 4th, I got the title. June 6th, I am relocated to Indianapolis to be with him because we were going to get married eventually and begin. I have our happily ever after. And then June 11th, we had to take him to the hospital, and, you know, they ran tests. And the doctors came back and said that his prostate cancer had returned in an aggressive, inoperable manner. Now, he had been battling prostate cancer for almost 15 years. And, you know, he had gone through that before, and but never saying that it's inoperable and that it's nothing to do. So during that time, we both like, what is going on? God, what are you doing? So they recommended hospice. So literally the next 6 weeks of my life was not only being in a new city at a new job, but being faced with the love of my life, going through the most devastating and gut-wrenching. And I don't know if your audience has ever had a family member deal with cancer, but when it's on the last leg, it comes quickly. It affects their body so quickly. And that's what was happening, watching my strong, handsome man really dwindle and deteriorate quickly. And so before that, I had planned on writing, you know, the battle behind my smile in my professional career of not attaining certain stuff. But God literally said, nope, this is what I want you to write about, going through and taking care of a loved one, taking care again, because my mom had lung cancer. And so I'm faced with this. June 4th, God gave me this. July 27th, my beloved Stefan passes away. They had given him 6 to 12 months to live, and he passed away in 6 weeks. And you're talking about devastated. I was peacefully devastated. Funeral was August 11th, and I'm sitting on there after, you know, all the activities saying, God, I'm going back home to Louisville. I'm not doing anything but sitting on the couch, and I'm going to become a recluse. And he was like, mm-hmm, yeah, so you can still do this anthology project. So I relocated August 27th back home. And I'm putting together a flyer calling for authors for anthology. I don't know. I didn't want to do it, but it was something. We go back to that purpose. When something's in you, Civil Right, you've got to get it out. At home, I was like, I'm not working. I need to grieve in a healthy manner. That was a miracle in itself because I've always worked. I was bred when I'm single. My parents are both deceased. My loved one my honey just died. And so for me to say I'm not working for a year because I want to grieve in a healthy manner, that was nobody but God speaking through me and letting me know, yes, this is what I want you to do. I wasn't worried about a job. I had savings, had reserve. Yes, I had that. But literally my focus was to grieve in a healthy manner because I was just kicked in the gut. So I'm doing this. September 19th, I had a virtual call. 52 people had signed up, 26 were on the call, and 20 of us signed contracts to do this anthology. 18 of us finished. And so I'm reading everybody's story, had not written mine yet in November because I was like, I do not want to relive certain parts of Stefan's death. And what it took me doing that project, I had to revisit the death of my parents and really put into perspective how their deaths prepared me to handle Stefan's death, although devastating, and handle it in a peaceful manner. And so I'm writing this, The Battle Behind My Smile, How Not to Give Up During Grief. Now, granted, this was, as I'm writing this in November, it's only 3 months after his funeral. And I'm like, how can I write about not giving up? And it's only been 3 months. But sometimes writing heals you. And your writing, even though you may not have experienced it physically, your spirit is writing from a place of healing. And that you can go back and read and say, yep, okay, I see why I wrote this. And so this story, my story in the book of 18 wonderful authors is The Battle Behind My Smile, How Not to Give Up During Grief. And so I take, I had to really revisit my mom's death and it was so ironic, Silver Ray, because when you go back into moments, you have other revelations. And so when my dad died in 96, my mom had turned 50 a month earlier. Stefan died, I had turned 50 6 months earlier. So I'm putting myself back in my mom's position at 50. The love of her life of 26 years had just gone. He was the love of my life for 16 months, and I'm feeling the gut-wrenching pain. So I'm going back and putting myself in my mom's position. She's 50 with three kids. My dad died unexpectedly at a dialysis, when he was at dialysis. So I'm putting myself back in the moment and getting wisdom from how I saw my mom not only handle grief as a woman, a widow at 50, after being married to the man for 26 years, but also dealing with three kids. And she spent over half her life as a married woman, so she's faced with all this. So writing that healed me and helped me understand, oh, this is what my mama was going through, and that's why she told us certain things and, you know, always pressed through, because not knowing at 50 I was going to lose the love of my life and take that wisdom unknowingly and press through. And so that is where I was last year this time, in an unknown place of grief. But I continue to speak the message that grief is an unexpected gift, because not only did it make me trust other people, but I was able to put my emotional wellness first and not worried about the rat race of, oh, I gotta have a job and have this. No, I had planned for that. And so I learn every day how to heal and grieve in a healthy manner for the last year, and I'm still learning. And so it has been an unexpected gift for me in the year. Not only have we released the anthology, but I'm releasing a second book in September, and I've also had other clients and helped them to birth their books in the process. And so in the last year, not knowing that this is what I was going to be doing this year, I have 21 authors under my publishing company who have either worked in the anthology or published books on their own.
Mm-hmm. Tanya, would you tell people from the story, what particular message are you wanting to convey to people who are going through grief? You say that for you, it gifted you somehow. But what would you say to people? Mm-hmm. What were you saying to people you think was the most effective part to help them in their case scenarios?
Absolutely. Three things, Sybil, right? Grief, it can't be controlled. You cannot control. Even with us knowing that they gave Stefan 6 months to 12 months to live, but he died in 6 weeks. So we was on the latter part, said, oh, we got at least 6 months. But no, we only had 6 weeks. So grief is uncontrollable. And so no matter how much you try to control it, it's uncontrollable. Secondly, it's inevitable. We're all going to have a date with losing someone we love, or we're going to be the someone that somebody has to grieve. And so it is inevitable. So in order to know that it's uncontrollable, inevitable, you have to prepare yourself. One of the people who helped me was a grief chaplain, Wanda Walker. She said, we prepare people to live and be successful, but we don't prepare them how to successfully grieve. And that's what I want people to know. You can grieve in a healthy, whole manner. It is painful. You will cry. You will go through all the emotions. In my upcoming book, I talk about forget the stages of grief, because what we've learned about the stages is that you go through these five to seven stages, and what it programs you to think is that before you go to the next one, you have to conquer the first one. Nope, because grief comes in waves. You can feel anger. You can feel disappointment. You can feel frustration all in the same moment. And it's okay because it's a part of your process. So grief comes in waves. It's uncontrollable, inevitable. And you can give yourself permission to grieve how you grieve. Because some people say, you know, it's been a year. Some people will say, hey, why are you still talking about it? It happened a year ago. You can't tell me how to grieve. I'm not where I was a year ago, yes, but I'm still grieving. It is still a lifelong process. So I will tell people, get out of it. It's uncontrollable. It's inevitable. And give yourself permission to grieve how you need to grieve.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think that probably says it all. And even, you know, the interesting thing about grief is even with all you said, it takes a minute to even receive it in a way that you can understand that this is how it works. You have to take
Absolutely.
It day by day.
And that's what I say in the book, Ray. As I talk, when my daddy died, I was 26 years old. You're talking about angry. I was a daddy's girl. People at the funeral would say stupid stuff, and I would pop off at the mouth. Why? Because, you know, some of the stupid cliches, well, how did he die? What happened? It doesn't matter. My daddy's in a coffin. It doesn't matter how he died. Right now, I don't need to hear that. When my mom died, I was in robotic mode because I was over her state. And then, again, like I said, I had a brother and sister. So I didn't give myself time to grieve until I had a breakdown and I had to go see a therapist. And she's like, honey, you have been on automatic pilot. And I did not know that because we're groomed to do what we're supposed to do. But when Stefan died, that's why I said grief is a lifelong process. Now I know at 51, going through that, it was okay for me to give myself time to heal and to seek help from not just a therapist, but other people who have gone through grief. I joined a grief group that was okay. I needed to do what I needed to do to help me grieve because I had never been in that situation. Although my mom and dad died, it was still a unique experience. Every loss is unique. And so that's why you have to give yourself, the same grace that you extend to others when you're grieving. Give yourself that same grace, and it's okay.
Yeah, and I guess for anybody that is listening, you have to know, and anybody who may be looking in the face of losing someone, it is absolutely an indescribable pain that you will deal with. It doesn't mean you're dying. It doesn't mean you can't make it through. Penetrating. And it seems totally overwhelming. It can make you feel like you've lost all sense of how to think or how to do anything.
Yes.
It does that. It blinds you. It like Tanya just said, you're basically feeling like a robot, that you're just going through the motions. Those things are absolutely the normal parts of what grief feels like. But just know that pain, it's incredible. But you do heal. You do get better. I always say to people, you don't get over it, but you do get through it. And that's the part you have to remember about it. And I don't know that I could say to anybody that there's a particular time frame for that, because if it is, I don't know what it is. But just know that you can get through it. You won't get over those people you love, but you will get through what it feels like at that point where just, you know, you feel like everything is just, you know, out of concept and out of control. You do get through it. I want to talk to you about, we've got about 15 minutes, but I want you to reflect on a couple of other books. One of them is your
I am enough, and mm-hmm. You can't quit now. So talk to us briefly about that, and then we're gonna wrap up. And anything else you feel like you need to share, go ahead and do that.
Wow, you brought up some oldies, Silver Ray. You Can't Quit Now was, I believe, my fifth book. I released that in 2013. And we're talking about grief. That was the one that when I had my breakdown, my mom died in 2005, right? It wasn't until about 2012 that I had a breakdown and had to go see a therapist. And that she told me, honey, you've been on automatic pilot, not dealing with certain things. And so wanting to give up, just a lot of things. When you suppress one thing in your life, it does affect other areas in your life. And so 2013 wasn't where I wanted to be socially in terms of having a relationship, going through different things. So that book is You Can't Quit Now. It's 40, a daily devotional, 42 daily devotions of how you don't quit. And it was just like, okay, I just took certain things that I learned in therapy and said, you know what, this happened, but you still can't quit. What happens if you quit? It's going to hurt more. So just You Can't Quit Now is just like, it's like a refreshing to say, hey, hurt is real. You can get through it, but you got to have that perseverance to keep going no matter what. So that's what that book is about. You Can't Quit Now. Yes, I Am Enough. It literally happened in my bedroom when I was going through something professionally, not thinking that I'm enough because I'm not getting the promotions that I'm applying for, knowing that I'm totally qualified and more than qualified. But rejection will play tricks on your mind and think that, oh, I must not be good enough. I must not be doing this. I must not be doing that. And literally I was in my bed and I just screamed, yes, I am enough. Literally in my bed. And that's how that book came about. Yes, I Am Enough. The 10 undeniable truths of knowing who you are now and who you are destined to become later. Then I did the sequel, Yes, I Am Enough, The Next Level. When you find out that you're enough and walk in that, enoughness is what I call it, then you can love, live, and share with others. And so that's what the Yes, I Am Enough is about. You have to know that you are enough. And I'm a Christian God girl. And so that book is really based on the scripture in Genesis that says we are created in the image of God. And I had to go back to that scripture. And if I'm created in the image of God and God lacks nothing, I lack nothing. I don't care what society says about certain standards of me not being this and that and that and this. I am enough based on being made in the image of God. And if I'm made in the image of God, I need to love who I am, regardless of what people say, and live it with humble boldness so I can be everything that I'm called to be in this earth. So that's what Yes, I Am Enough is about. It's, it was amazing. And like going back to writing, I always write from a place of what I've literally gone through. So nothing that you get from me is something that I have not gone through and conquered on that level, and I'm still conquering because I'm still dealing with having not to quit at this season in my life. I'm still dealing with having to remind myself that, yes, I'm enough in certain arenas because the more you evolve and the more you grow, you get new experiences that never been done before, and that is scary. So I still have to remind myself of that. And then, of course, The Battle Behind Your Smile is my eighth book. Like I said, I have a book, The Prayers of the Righteous and Grieving, available this month. That's coming out September 27th, and that is literally a quick read. It's less than 100 pages. And I had to go and find the balance of my faith and my human feelings, because people's faith can get you off focus and have you feel a certain type of way because you're going through human feelings of grief. So this last year has taught me, especially with death on death, you know what? Some of the stuff that the church be teaching ain't right. And again, God took me back to the scripture with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he was faced with crucifixion, and he balanced his spirituality and his humanity. He was like, God, if it be thy will, take this cup, bitter cup from me. But nevertheless, I'm going to do what you said. But Jesus was human and spiritual all at the same time. And so if Jesus is like that, why we try to be super saints? No. I'm human.
I get it.
You're getting on my nerves.
Yeah, I just talked about that recently.
I'm trying to agree.
I get
what
it.
You're saying is agitating me. So that's what that book is.
Well, you have just a lovely and wonderful and special collection of books. And I want people to know exactly how to reach out to you and how to get those books. So let's share that information.
Yes, I'm on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, all Tanya White. And Tanya is T-A-N-Y-A. White is in the color. On Facebook, you can go down Civil Rights Friends List and friend me. Also visit my publishing website, SNT, the initials, S, Sam, Nice, Tanya, publishing.com. And then TanyaWhite.com is my personal website.
And on Amazon?
Oh, yes. All my books are available on Amazon. Also, The Battle Behind My Smile and the upcoming The Prayers of the Righteous Agreement are also available on Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Books A Million, and Amazon.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's been a pleasure having you today, and I just really hope that people learned a lot. Learned a lot about what it really does take to get a book out there for people to hear their purpose and their stories, and how it's just really not easy, but it is definitely doable. And I hope that there will be you know, those folks that are going to reach out to you, because you are not just a publisher, you're truly a mentor in this process. And I think that really services, I mean, that's something that is so worth paying for. People who really want to do this, it's so worth paying for somebody who really cares and teaches and trains you through the process as well. So thank you very much, Tanya White. And
thank you so much,
I am going to look forward to. Well, you know, we're staying in touch on social media, and we always will. I'm so thankful for all the things that I see you. You are so good at cheerleading your people. I love seeing it.
I am a voice cheerleader.
I love seeing it come through
my eyes. Everybody in my eyes is like, yes, we can do it. But Civil Ray, thank you for being consistent in Foxology. When I first got on Blog Talk, you were one of the shows that I was like, I want to be like her. And so thank you for your tenacity, your creativity, and your perseverance to continue to give us quality radio with subjects and guests that we can relate to. So honor you, my sister.
You. Oh, thank you. You as well. Well, you have yourself an incredible day, and you know we're going to have our eyes on each other and have each other's back. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be my special guest today.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
Thanks. And thank all of you, too. I am so glad that you tuned in to hear this conversation and the others. You know, I got a ton of them. I've been on Blog Talk Radio, can you believe it, for 10 years. So there is an archive. I tell you, I brag about my guests because they are always, always awesome. There's so much learning you can get from them and so much empowerment from the things that they share on the show. So browse through that when you have an opportunity and see what's there. And I always encourage you to share if you would. I as Tanya just mentioned, I attempt to do everything with a high level of professionalism, and so delivering it to you by the time you hear it, I just expect
that there is something there that's going to be inspirational, educational, somehow giving you some takeaways that can help you wherever you are in your life and journey and business, okay? All right, I want to remind you, too, that I've got a couple of books on Amazon, Stay in the Ring by Silver Ray Fox, and also What is Faith by Silver Ray Fox, and I'm tagging my name onto it because there are other people who have books with the same name, and I'm guessing probably with the same flavor. I haven't really looked at that part of it, but make sure that if you're looking for my books that you put the name along with the title so you get the right thing. I also have a website, silverrayfox.com, and there's a lot of information there about me and a lot of articles that I've written over the years. I think I've been, gosh, I can't even recall the actual date of that site being put up, but there's years of articles there that I've written that give, again, inspiration, motivation, empowerment that I think you will enjoy for sure. So I'm going to let you all go. I'm going to look forward to talking to you again next week. Next week, I am on In the Spotlight with Master Your Mindset, and you know how much I love doing that. So I hope you will tune in. I'll look forward to talking to you then. In the meantime, be good, be blessed, and be awesome.